MacCast, Friday, October 17th, 2014. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. It's been a little too long since we talked, and that is my really bad pun and way of saying that we're going to be talking about Apple's It's Been Way Too Long event in this episode. I held off a couple days so that we could cover the announcements. I like to cover the announcements rather than just the rumors leading up to the announcements, although very often, and this time around, there's no exception, those two things do end up being pretty similar, pretty close to the same thing. But I wanted to make sure that we had all the juicy tidbits and details. I also waited another day just to get a lot of that fallout. You know that a lot of people jump on sort of covering the event immediately. And I was a guest on a couple podcasts doing that. Actually, over at 5x5, I did a little special episode with Dan Benjamin and also Victor Agreda Jr. from the unofficial Apple weblog. So if you want to check that out, that's on the 5x5 podcast network, the specials podcast. You can listen to us there, giving our immediate reactions. But as very often happens with this stuff, there is little bits of information that sort of come out after the fact. So you tend to gloss over some of the things because you're all caught up in the hype of the event. And I like to get just past that before we start talking about things. So we're going to talk about all of the announcements and sort of some of the things that happened after the announcements in this episode. And we've got a lot to get to. And I want to do that. But before we get to it, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors. And that is Lynda.com. I love Lynda.com. It has helped me immensely with just expanding my skills. I'm a web developer, I do programming, and I find it to be a valuable resource. And many of you know Lynda.com. For those of you who don't, it's a site, it helps you learn and keep up to date with your software, with programming skills, photography, video, CAD, writing, you name it. They have very likely a video that can help you out. Over 2,400 courses taught by amazing instructors. These are folks who have worked in industry. They know what they're talking about. They add more videos all of the time, and it's really high quality. That's something I really appreciate. This is high production value stuff. Great audio so you can hear an instructor. Great video and screencasts that you can actually see and use. Plus, with the premium plans, they have all of the materials that you can download and follow along with the courses. And they cover all skill levels. So whether you're advanced and you're wanting to expand your skills or you're brand new to a topic, they can get you up to speed very, very quickly. And like I said, they're always on top of creating new courses. As a matter of fact, I looked just yesterday and boom, they have a macOS 10 Yosemite new features video right there. So if you want to get up to speed with Yosemite, which was just released yesterday, they already have a video there for you. Also, videos on Apple's new programming language, Swift, if you want to get into that. There's two courses for that. That's the kind of things that you can do with Lynda.com. And they also have a mobile app, which means that on your Apple and your Android devices, you can learn anytime, anywhere. And their pricing starts as low as $25 a month, and that's going to give you unlimited access to the entire Lynda.com library. So you can go on there, you can browse around. They have great browsing and search features. It makes it really easy to find the courses you're looking for. You can search by instructors. So if you find an instructor that you particularly like and connect with, you can get all of their content. And they also have gift subscriptions. So this could be perfect. The holidays are coming up. They're right around the corner. Going to hit you faster than you think. And if you want to give somebody in your life the power of learning, the power to develop new skills or broaden their existing skills, Lynda.com is great for that too. And best of all, MacCast listeners, you can try it out for 7 days completely free. You get access to the entire course library. So you can go through there. You don't have to take my word for it. You can see what it's all about. Just go to lynda.com/MacCast. That's lynda.com/MacCast. And you can try it out. You're really going to love it. If you haven't checked it out, just go there, sign up, try it for a week. And I think you'll be very, very impressed. And a big thank you to lynda.com for their continued support of the MacCast. So let's jump right into Apple's latest event, 10/16/24. They did their It's Been Way Too Long event. And there was a lot of speculation going into it as to what exactly does that mean. You know, is Apple going to be coming back to some of the products that they haven't updated in a while? It's pretty much known that we were going to see some iPad updates, but a lot of people were wondering what's going to happen on the Mac side. Are we going to see some updates to the iMacs, the Mac Pros, the Mac Minis? Anything going on with the Apple TV? What's happening there? Well, we now know. Unfortunately, the Apple TV didn't get any love. We'll talk about that maybe toward the end of the show, especially a little bit when I have Kelly Gamont on as a guest. She had some predictions and actually did very well going into the Apple event. We're going to talk to her a little bit later in the show. But, you know, the event itself, I guess that's a good place to start, right? Let's talk about just the general mood and the kind of the pacing of this event. This was a smaller event. It was at Apple's town hall, so there was a lot less media there. And anytime they do that, it's got this sort of more intimate vibe to it. And I kind of like it. As a matter of fact, Tim Cook was really in his element, I thought. He seemed really jovial, made some jokes with the crowd and stuff like that, particularly regarding his fashion sense, which I guess he got called out on a little bit. And they were talking about the Apple Watch. So they kind of opened up with the typical stuff, talking about where Apple's been, what they've been doing. It was really slow in the beginning. As a matter of fact, I think I commented, we did a live chat for MacCast listeners. And if you haven't or aren't aware of that, if you've never seen me tweet this out before, one, follow me on Twitter and you'll get these notifications. But when Apple does their live events, I have an IRC chat that I set up, and I invite you to come just hang out and chat along as the event's going, especially when Apple's doing live stream. So I had commented in there that, you know, 40 minutes in and we didn't really have anything other than a rehash. So they kind of rehashed Apple Pay, and there was actually some nice little updates to Apple Pay. Big one is that Apple signed another 500 banks within just a month after announcing it. So that means a lot more banks are on board to be able to support the platform. And that's important. Those local and regional banks that many of us like to use, credit unions, those types of banks weren't sort of announced at the original announcement. You just kind of had the big major banks like Chase, you know, JP Morgan Chase and Bank of America, those. So they've got 500 more banks on board. More importantly, too, they also announced a bunch of additional new retailers. They're going to have some coming on board now, some before the end of the year, and I would assume a lot more in 2015. But the unofficial Apple weblog has a full list of the 58 new partners. And I'll link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. But just for example, Champs and Foot Locker, I did notice a lot of these are sort of repetitive. So, you know, I think they got on board like Foot Locker as an entire organization. So it's going to be all the different Foot Locker outlets being Kids Foot Locker, Ladies Foot Locker, and they're listing all of those separately. So 58 may be a little bit of a stretch. You got Texaco, Radio Shack, the Sports Authority, and Champ Sports. Again, I think those two may be related. I'm not entirely positive. Chevron, BJ's Wholesale Club. The list goes on and on. And they already had, you know, Toys R Us and Bloomingdale's and Macy's, McDonald's, Petco, Panera. So all those folks are still on board as well. And I think that's going to be really a key for the success of Apple Pay, right? It's one thing for them to have it, but they've got to have their partners on board in the form of the banks. And more importantly, the retail partners. You have to be able to walk into the retail establishments that you frequently go to and be able to use the system. And I think there's going to be some push from consumers if this works really well. That's another thing, is this really has to be, and I commented on this to a couple of folks, this has to be dead perfect. It has to work the way they showed in the demo. Anything that's going to slow down checkout or slow down, you know, if it's not faster than swiping your card and signing a receipt, then it's going to be a fail. And it should be quicker than that. But if they have technical problems or glitches, if there's problems with the readers, the NFC doesn't work for some reason, that could be a little bit of a mark. And I'm sure we'll hear about it. The system is going to be available on the 20th, coming up on Monday. So you'll be able to hopefully walk into a retail store on Monday, maybe a Walgreens, place like that, and actually make a payment. I will probably on Monday, like a lot of nerds, try and seek out a place where I can actually buy something. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of not impulse purchases, but you know, purchases that weren't necessarily going to be made if Apple Pay wasn't already in place. And it does still require that you have an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus because you need to have the NFC chip in your device. But they also further announced that it's going to work for online purchases as well. And for that, of course, you're just going to be able to use Apple Pay. You're not going to have the iPhone, anything like that, but you'll be able to go into an app and actually make a purchase through your Apple Pay account as well. So that was kind of some updates to Apple Pay. They also did a little bit of an update to Apple Watch. This one more for developers. They announced that WatchKit is going to be rolling out next month in November. That means developers are going to be able to start to develop applications for the Apple Watch, and the Apple Watch still is shipping, they say, early 2015. No harder date than that. They didn't give us any sort of update there. When Apple says early 2015, I'm figuring that means the end of the first quarter, maybe early second quarter in kind of Apple speak. So I really don't expect to see anything till April, May timeframe in terms of an Apple Watch launch. If it comes out sooner than that, I'd be really surprised. We did hear that Apple was kind of targeting maybe Valentine's Day in February, but I still think that's going to be a little bit too soon. And then they give us a little bit of an update on OS X Yosemite and iOS 8. I guess we should start with the iOS 8 update. In my notes, I had this flipped, but it's probably more appropriate to stick with iOS 8. iOS 8.1 is going to be rolling out. They mentioned it's going to bring back some of the features people are missing. Specifically, they called out the camera roll, which we kind of knew was coming back. Also, they're going to be rolling out the public beta of the iCloud photo library. This is the thing that's going to allow you to put all of your photos into iCloud so you can have them on every device and Mac, wherever you want. They did point out that they're not going to be doing any downscaling. These are going to be the full-size images that are stored there up there in iCloud storage. I think we talked about sort of how this is going to work on your iOS devices. On your iOS device, it's actually going to pull down and carry a smaller image. That's what you're going to work for editing and things like that. That makes sense, so you don't eat up all the storage on your device. It'll still store the full-size image in your iCloud storage, and then any edits or anything like that that you make to your photo will be synced across, which is very cool. The downside to this, though, that I see is all of those large images, a giant, you know, every photo in your photo library, if you're like me, you probably have a pretty large iPhoto library. You're going to be eating up a lot of your iCloud storage space. And of course, that means you're going to buy more, which is something that Apple, I'm sure, is gunning for. You know, they're hoping that we're all going to need more storage and have to buy a little bit more. So I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all solution. Some people are really going to enjoy the feature. If you have a huge photo library and you want to just keep it all up in the cloud, you might need to look for another solution, third-party solution, something like that. But iOS 8.1 hopefully will also fix all of the bugs that we've been experiencing. And there's quite a few of them. Many of you have pointed them out to me, including Jeremy, who sent me this comment.
Hi, Adam. It's Jeremy from the UK here. And I'm afraid I am livid. What is wrong with the new iPhone 6 and Bluetooth? Or is it just me? But my new iPhone 6 will not connect with my Bluetooth Bose speaker. It won't connect with my Logitech K811 keyboard, which is absolutely critical to the workflow at my desk. It doesn't connect with my Bluetooth headphones. Well, it does actually, but only when it feels like it and only after it seems several resets of both devices. What's going on here? I don't seem to be getting any response from Bose, Sony, or Logitech, or if I am, they appear to be sending their responses via carrier pigeon. I mean, is there some new variety of Bluetooth that's being used or something like that, and it's just that the manufacturers haven't managed to catch up with it? Or is there a firmware update that I'm missing? I tell you, this is absolutely driving me crazy, and I really do hope that you can help. Many thanks.
Hey, Jeremy. Unfortunately, I don't think I can help because really you're not the only one experiencing this. A lot of us are. I have several of my Bluetooth devices that are no longer working, and it really feels like this is an Apple issue and something that they need to address. The big hope is that iOS 8.1, which they promised us at this event, will fix these sorts of bugs. But I've had reports of people losing connectivity to speakers, headphones. Mine can't connect to my automatic, which is the little thing for monitoring my driving habits in my car. And you know, none of the fixes that you seem to try, pairing, unpairing, I mean, you rip your hair out. So I totally feel your frustration. Many others in the community do as well. And I don't think it's tied necessarily to hardware. I think it was an iOS 8.0.x update issue. And hopefully 8.1 brings a fix. Apple says that's going to be available to us on Monday. So we'll have to follow up with each other. Maybe I'll shoot you back an email come Monday and see if it hasn't resolved some of your issues. But that's, I think, the best we can hope for. There are also several iOS software updates, including updates to iWork, which is going to bring compatibility for some of the continuity things. So you're going to want to grab those. Those were available yesterday, and you can pick those up. So that was kind of the update to iOS 8. Oh, they also mentioned that the installed base of iOS 8 was now up to about 48%, which is slower, I think, than the prior adoption rate, to the point where even in their announcement of it, they kind of had to combine that percentage with iOS 7 to show that, you know, the majority of consumers are running the latest two OSs. I think they would have preferred to have said, hey, we have the majority of our customers on iOS 8, but they didn't reach that goal yet. Kind of felt like they were a little bit making some excuses for that in the keynote. A lot of people have pointed to the fact that many people, even if they wanted to upgrade, couldn't because they have smaller devices. 16 gigabyte, say, iPads or iPhones that didn't have enough storage space to do the over-the-air update, which I think long-term is going to be a problem for Apple. If you ran into that, we covered this on a past MacCast, but in case you missed it, if you do run into that issue where you can't do an over-the-air update because you're out of storage on your device, a good workaround for that is to dock your computer, your device rather, into iTunes using the USB cable, the USB charge sync cable, and just upgrade through the iTunes software. The problem with the over-the-air update is it actually has to download the entire update in the background, store it on your device, and then need some additional swap space to actually perform the upgrade. So you need more space than just the size of the download. Whereas if you do it on your Mac through iTunes, it can download, use your Mac's hard drive, and then just runs the installer updater, and it will go a little bit better. But I think that's holding Apple back a little bit. So they're going to have to come up with some other solution. And also, it just is going to further illustrate the point I'm going to make later about storage sizes. I have a pretty firm opinion on what they're doing with the storage sizes on their iOS device, and I think some of you share that opinion as well. But we'll get into that a little bit later when we talk about some of the new hardware updates. Right now, I want to talk a little bit about OS X Yosemite. OS X Yosemite is out. They made it available yesterday. They announced it. They rehashed a lot of the features and functionality. If you want to go through all that stuff again, you can watch the keynote video from yesterday. It's up and available on Apple's website if you didn't catch it live. But what I wanted to talk to you about was, now that OS X Yosemite is out, a lot of you are probably going to be tempted to upgrade right away if you haven't already. I know many of you probably already did upgrade. But I'm going to say, you know, most of us should probably hold off. With any new major release, any new update, and I know we've talked about this in the past, there's going to be bugs, there's going to be issues. And what you have to do is ask yourself, do you really want to have to fight them on a daily basis? Do you want to be the guinea pig who discovers the bugs? And many of us got bit with this with iOS 8, right? iOS 8 released, and it had several very annoying bugs. Not, you know, showstoppers. The world's not going to end here, but it's a hassle in your day. And especially with your Mac, if it's something that you rely on to get work done, to get things done, you don't want anything disrupting that. Or at the very least, when you're entering into that upgrade, when you're getting ready to do it, you want to go in eyes wide open. You want to know what the obstacles are so that you can already have a plan to sort of, you know, juke around them or whatever. And one of those things that you very likely want to make sure before you upgrade is that any apps or software that you're using runs and works on the new operating system. So many third-party apps, they may work day one, they may not. Now, I'll tell you, I've been running the beta, and from personal experience, most of my software just worked. There were very few apps that I personally use that seemed to have any kinds of issues. Most of them just worked right out of the box, didn't have any problems. But that doesn't mean that's going to be your experience, or that you don't have some bit of software that's a little more obscure, a little more out there, that just hasn't been updated or doesn't work. So a great place to go check on that stuff still is roaringapps.com, R-O-A-R, you know, like a big cat, because we used to be named after all the big cats, roaringapps.com. And you can just check your software and see if it's updated. It's a community sort of run thing. So anybody who's running an application or run into a problem can submit and say, yes, this works with OS 10 Yosemite. No, it doesn't. Or, hey, it kind of works, and here's some of the workarounds. So it's a great place for information anytime a major upgrade to the operating system happens. So just bookmark that one and keep it there. But if you really have to have it, you want to play with it day one, consider maybe installing it on a second machine. That's what I do. I have a less critical Mac that I throw it on. I have a MacBook Air. I don't put it on my primary production machine that I use for the MacCast. Or another option is put it on an external drive, or maybe a partition on your existing drive. I tend to hesitate recommending people putting it on a partition, because that gets a little dicey. And especially if you don't know what you're doing, you don't want a live part. You can live partition your drive, but if something goes south, you could lose data. If you have an extra USB external drive around, you can boot from that, install it on that. And I think that's a better way to go. So not everybody needs to upgrade day one. If you have upgraded, let us know your experience too. Share with us. Have you run into issues? Has it been smoothless for you? A lot of us would like to know, hey, what is the public experience that's going on out there? And this time around, it's a little, we're going a little more eyes wide open, because Apple did the public beta program. So I know a lot of you ran the public beta and have been running the public beta for a while. And just to comment on that, as far as version numbers go, the release version is, I guess it has a different build number than the final public beta version, or if you're running the developer versions, than even the developer version. But there is no additional update. The thing that was delivered to you as a beta member program, either public beta or developer, is the same thing, even though it has a different build number, at least from everything that I've been reading. So you can either hold off and wait for the next update to come out, you know, to kind of get all in line with the build number of everybody else. If it totally drives you crazy and you're like, I have to have the release build version, then you can still download that and just run the installer, install it right over the top of what you have, from what I've been reading, and that should get you up to date and get info dialog box looking like everybody else's, if that's what you need. But you really don't need to do it. You could probably wait for that first update. And I figure if you are going to update, we probably should cover some of my favorite tips when you're going to upgrade. One of them is I always like to create a USB emergency install disk. So get a little thumb drive. You need to have an 8 GB or larger flash drive, and take the installer and put it on there. There's a couple ways you can do that. Probably the simplest way is there's an application called Disk Maker X, and I'll have a link to this in the show notes at maccast.com. It's been updated for Yosemite, so you can just download it. Download Yosemite. Don't run the installer before you run anything. Quit the installer. It will leave the installer in place in your applications folder. I think it puts it into applications, and I believe the installer is named OS 10 Yosemite installer.app. Don't quote me on the exact name of it, because I haven't downloaded it yet personally to do the upgrade. But once you have it, it'll be pretty obvious the installer's in there. So get the installer, and then you just run Disk Maker X, and it will walk you through the process of creating a flash boot disk. You basically insert your 8 GB or larger flash drive and just follow the on-screen instructions, and it will build you a disk. That's really the easiest way to go. There's a couple other methods. You can use Disk Utility to actually create your bootable flash drive, but it's a fairly drawn out and involved process. You have to go in and go into the package contents. You got to find the installer image file. You got to mount it. You got to run some terminal commands. You got to throw it into Disk Utility. Disk Maker X handles all of that stuff for you, but it can be done, and there's some great instructions over at Macworld. I'll put a link to those in the show notes at maccast.com as well. Or if you're really hardcore, you can create a boot disk through the terminal. Apple actually has a terminal command, create install media, that will allow you to do this as well. And again, I'll have a link to the article at Macworld that covers all of these different steps. But, you know, create that USB installer. I like having them around. So I have one for Lion. I have one for Mountain Lion. And now I'll have have one for Mavericks. And now I will have one for OS X Yosemite. And they're just good, handy things to have around. If you get in trouble and for some reason there's a problem with the emergency partition, a boot partition, you can use your thumb drive and get that out. So do that first. And then, of course, you know my mantra, backup, 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 have backups of your backups. I actually usually do a whole extra bootable super duper clone. So I have the one that I do daily that I already have. I have my Time Machine backup and I have my Crash Plan backup. I usually grab an older hard drive that I might have lying around, typically an internal drive that I've pulled out or, you know, decommissioned for some other purpose. And then I have a NewerTek USB universal drive adapter, which just lets you plug a bare drive via USB right into your Mac. So I do that, format it, run a super duper clone, and then I have a bootable version of my operating system right before I did the upgrade. And then I can keep that around. What's great about having that as an extra is I can continue to do my regular backup strategy using my backup drives, and now I just have an extra full backup of my system prior to moving to OS X Yosemite. So I'll have my entire Maverick system. So if something goes really south, or if there's some file I forgot to migrate or something I forgot to do, I still have that as a safeguard. I can immediately jump back and either restore that or just go back to it, boot off of it, work off of it, whatever I need to do. So that's what I do for my backup strategy. You know I'm a fanatic about it, but you know, make sure you have at least two full backups of your system before you do an upgrade. And I know some people think that's a hassle, but you know, that one time where something goes south and suddenly you lose all your data, you're gonna be really glad that you have those extra backups. And as far as, you know, what do you do? Do you do an over-the-top upgrade or should I just do a, you know, clean install? Most people, over-the-top upgrade works great. So just, you know, let it do its thing. Go into the App Store, download OS X Yosemite, and it is free. Let the installer run and just do its thing, and you're going to be fine. Now, if your Mac has been giving you fits with the current operating system that you have, so if you're running Mavericks and you've been having issues and beach balls and crashes and things like that, you might want to consider a clean install. I've been doing clean installs about once every three upgrade cycles now. So if I've gone through two over the top upgrades, then this third one I'm probably going to try and do a clean install. But last time I did a clean install of OS X Mavericks, so I'm just going to go ahead and do the over the top install. But if you are considering a clean install, what you're going to want to do is, one, make sure that you have all of your application software, your installers downloaded, all of the product keys handy. I actually use 1Password for this. It makes it really easy. All of my software keys are in 1Password. So when I need to get at them, the very first app I install after doing a clean install is 1Password. And then I can get to all of that stuff. 1Password followed by, actually, I think it's technically Dropbox followed by 1Password because I use Dropbox to sync my 1Password database. So Do those two things, and then I can install all of my other apps. But, you know, make sure you have all that stuff handy. Create that emergency USB boot disk just in case you need it, and that way you can hold down the Option key and use that to boot up your existing Mac and then run Disk Utility to do the hard drive erase, because you can't be booted off your main boot drive. You have to be booted off another disk. So boot off that, erase the main drive because you have at least two backups, right? So erase that. Run the OS X Yosemite installer off that boot USB stick. And then once the operating system is installed, go ahead. It will boot up into the Migration Assistant, restore all of your user folder, your settings, all those sorts of things. You could bring your applications and everything back if you'd like. I like to fresh install my applications. So I just have it bring back my user folder and my settings and then do a fresh reinstall of all of my apps. And then you have a nice, clean, fresh operating system to work off of. But like I said, that's probably only about 10% of you that may need to do that. The other 90%, do the over-the-top upgrade and just enjoy OS X Yosemite. I have to say, in running the beta, I really do like the new flatter UI, the clean, crisp look to the operating system. I think it just gives it a nice, fresh feel. And also, it feels pretty snappy, at least on my MacBook Air. I'd be curious to get some of your experiences if you are running OS X Yosemite. And one of the big new features that I want to point out that a lot of people are excited about with Yosemite is Handoff. And I think I already mentioned Apple updated its iWork applications. So you need to make sure that you get the new versions of the applications. You need to make sure if you're going to use Handoff that you have Bluetooth turned on your Mac and your iOS devices. And you're also going to need to make sure that you have enabled Handoff. If you go into your iOS device under settings, in the general settings, there is a Handoff section, and you need to make sure that you've turned Handoff support on. And even if you do all that, there's one other thing that's a little bit of a gotcha. And this is a disappointment for me because I actually don't have a Mac that supports the hardware that's required for Handoff. For Handoff to work, you need to have a Mac that supports Bluetooth 4.0, but with Bluetooth Low Energy, BTLE. And that means you need to have a Mac Mini or a MacBook Air that is 2011 or later, a MacBook Pro, and I'm generalizing here because there's specifics within these ranges, but in general, Mac Mini, MacBook Air 2011 or newer, MacBook Pro or an iMac 2012 or newer, and if you have a Mac Pro, you need to have the 2013 Mac Pro. Basically, you need to confirm that your Bluetooth supports something called LMP version 0x6. And to check this, you can go into the Apple menu on your Mac, select About This Mac, and then click on the More Info button, and then click on the System Report button. And then when that comes up, select the Bluetooth area from the sidebar on the left, and then look underneath the hardware section. You're going to want to look down the list, find the thing that says LMP version, and if it's anything lower than 0x6, then Handoff is hands off, basically, on your Mac. It's not going to be supported. You need to have 0x6 or later for the LMP version. And so a lot of folks are finding out, oh, my Mac doesn't support Handoff. Now, one thing I am looking into, and a couple people have mentioned, is that if your Mac doesn't have a Bluetooth Low Energy, there are those little dongles that you can get, you know, basically a little USB thing that you stick in your USB port, and it adds Low Energy Bluetooth functionality. I'm hoping that there's some out there that will natively support the Mac and Handoff. And if you happen to know of one, or if you're using one on an older Mac, we'd love to hear about it, because I want to, you know, I want to have a solution for those of us who have older Macs to be able to use Handoff functionality, because I think it really is a killer feature. It's that sort of seamless integration. And they talked about this during the keynote, the seamless integration of your iOS devices, your Mac, being able to start up that email on one device and move to another, to be able to take your phone call on your Mac or your iPad via your iPhone, those sorts of things. We'd all like to benefit from that. And, you know, a lot of us don't want to have to buy a new Mac to be able to do that. Although we'll talk later about some of the new Macs. Maybe you'll want to buy a new one anyway. And then another thing I wanted to point out with OS X Yosemite, if you're starting to run it, is it does have widget support in Notification Center. And a couple of people had emailed to ask me about this because they noticed that there was weather information now inside the Notification Center, and wanted to know about turning that off. It works very similar. The widgets work very similar to the way that they do in Notification Center on your iOS device. So you basically go into Notification Center, you know, click that little button in the upper left-hand corner of your menu bar, right-hand corner of your menu bar, rather, or, you know, do the swipe thing, however you get into the notifications, and then just scroll all the way down to the bottom, and you should see a little edit button, and there you can toggle on or off or order or edit any of the widgets that might be available to your system. And again, this is something that third-party developers are going to be able to make available in their apps, just like on iOS. So as you have different apps that support widgets, you'll have more functionality that you can add into Notification Center. And it's kind of a cool new feature of Yosemite. There's a ton of new features in Yosemite, and I think in a future episode of the MacCast, we're going to try and deep dive into a lot of the tips and tricks, maybe on the next episode. I've got to do some of my own research, because like I said, I played around with it a little bit with my MacBook Air, but I haven't really dove deep. And now we've got, you know, a lot of information coming out. Syracuse's tome, as he does every time a new operating system comes out. John Siracusa over at Ars Technica writes a volume, sort of the pinnacle review of the operating system. There's a lot of juicy tidbits in there and stuff showing up all over the internet. So we'll dig into those and try and share some of those on some future episodes. But that was basically OS X Yosemite in a nutshell. And that was kind of the major big updates. Again, there were some additional software updates that came out afterwards to support OS X Yosemite and iOS, a new version of iTunes, iTunes 12.0.1. And this came out not only for OS X Yosemite machines, but I also had it show up on my Mavericks machine. If you are a big fan of the sidebar in iTunes, you may want to avoid this update for a while. I'm not sure how long you'll be able to avoid the iTunes update, but huge UI change with iTunes to coincide with OS X Mavericks release. A lot of people really hate it. Doesn't really bother me too much. Maybe I don't live enough of my life inside iTunes, but you know, it's got that more flat look, but the sidebar is pretty much completely gone. And I say pretty much completely gone. There actually is a little way you can kind of get it back, but it's siloed. It's sandboxed a little bit in terms of your media library. So it's not the same sidebar where you go in, you have the sidebar, and you can access your movies and your music and things like that. What you can do if you want to get it back, this little trick is if you go into any one of your libraries. So let's just take the music library, for example. Go into the music library and then click on playlists. And when you do that, what you'll notice is you'll get the sidebar back. And in the sidebar, you'll be able to tap on music, and you can even change the view over on the right-hand side. There's a little drop-down, and so you can switch between albums and artists and things like that. So even though you're on the playlist tab, you can still view your music. It's a little counterintuitive, and I think that's, you know, some of the things people are responding to with iTunes 12 is like, this is just weird. How you get to stuff, the UI is really weird. But click on playlists, and then you'll see the sidebar there, but it will be restricted to just whatever category you're in. So if you clicked on the music category, you're only going to see things in the sidebar that are related to music. Same thing with movies and that sort of thing. So it's not all commingled anymore. Everything's kind of siloed. So there's a little way to get that back. Another thing that is really annoying me is I switch very frequently between the full iTunes view and the mini player view. And you always had that little button in iTunes 11 that you could click. That is now hidden. I had no idea where it was. I couldn't find it. I was having to switch to the keyboard shortcut, which isn't that bad of a thing. I think it's Command Shift M or Command Option M. I don't remember. Well, that's, I guess that is one bad thing about keyboard shortcuts, is you got to remember them. But there's a keyboard shortcut to toggle between the mini player, or toggle the mini player on and off rather. But that little button that you clicked on appeared to be gone. It's actually there. It's where the album art would be. So if you kind of hover over the album art as you're playing a track, or if you're not playing a track, if you just kind of hover in that area, you'll see it appear. Why Apple hides user interface elements like that is beyond me, but it's there in case you are looking for it like I was. So update to iTunes 12. A lot of you are probably going to hate it. I'd love to get some feedback. Love it or hate it, let me know what you think. And then Apple also updated some of the iLife applications, including GarageBand, to add support for OS X Yosemite. They added UI enhancements. What was interesting to me about the GarageBand update is that they're still clinging on to the little wood sides, the skeuomorphic wood sides. Everything else is kind of flattened out, but they still just, they're thinner, I think, but they're still there. So you still got hints back to that work. But they've got additional updates for effects plugins, a new voice template, which I'm curious to try out for recording vocals. I'm assuming voiceover kind of stuff, so maybe it won't have all of the enhancements. The workaround I've been using for that is using the podcast track, but when you do the podcast track, it's got ducking turned on. It's got a bunch of other presets that I really don't like to have set, so I'm hoping the voice template takes care of that. There's some new sharing options, including sharing GarageBand projects via MailDrop. And if you rely on accessibility, there are multiple enhancements to accessibility in GarageBand. So worthwhile update to grab if you need that sort of functionality. And then in addition to GarageBand, they also updated iMovie to version 10.0.5. Once again, it has UI enhancements to kind of bring it in line with the OS X Yosemite look and feel. and include some improvements to iCloud compatibility for iMovie Theater. So make sure you grab all of your, this is just generally a good thing to do, is you're probably going to want to open the Mac App Store and make sure after you upgrade, or maybe even before you upgrade to Yosemite, that you grab all the latest software updates for the apps that you use, so that you can enable all the new functionality and features and things like that that are going to be compatible with a lot of the stuff that went on under the hood. And Apple did do a lot of under the hood updates in OS X Yosemite. So that was kind of all of the software stuff. Now let's get into the big hardware announcements. We got new iPads. I don't think it was shocking to anyone that was going to happen. One nice thing that came out of the iPad updates is we're back to numbers. So we no longer have to say the iPad mini with Retina display, or the iPad Air, or the iPad with Retina display. And it's sort of behind the scenes. Yeah, we really know that's the iPad 4 or the iPad 3 or 6 or whatever it might be. Apple threw the numbers right back on them. So we got the iPad Air 2. So you have iPad Air, iPad Air 2. We got the iPad Mini 3. And you still have the iPad Mini 2 around. What was interesting, too, about the numbering is they retrofitted the numbers back onto the older models. So, you know, I think it was iPad Mini with Retina display. That's now called the iPad Mini 2 or iPad Mini. Yeah, iPad Mini 2, right? That's the second generation one. And we have the iPad Mini 3, which is new. The big updates to the iPad line came in the Air, the iPad Air 2. They had this great video. If you remember when Apple originally announced the iPad Air, they had this video that featured a pencil. And basically, you saw a pencil on profile in a bunch of different scenarios, an office, a schoolroom, and things like that. And it turned out the iPad was behind the pencil, kind of illustrating how thin the iPad Air was. Well, this time around, they took a laser to the pencil and they chopped off the top to show that the iPad Air 2 is thinner. It's actually 18% thinner, just 6.11 millimeters. I think the iPad Air was about 7 millimeters. And they even shaved it just a fraction, 0.02 pounds off the weight. It's 0.96 pounds for the Wi-Fi iPad Air. And the way they got that extra space, a couple things. They redid the display, so it's now fully laminated. They got the glass, the touch sensors, and the LCD all together. As far as replacement of screens, I think that's not a big win for us. It may drive up the costs of replacements. But as far as the screen itself, one, it lets Apple achieve that extra thinness. But I think more importantly for us is that the clarity of the display becomes better. The off-angle viewing, stuff is going to look like it's floating right on top of the display. So whenever Apple sort of puts those layers closer together, you get a much better experience, I think, in terms of the display. And another thing that I'm very excited to hear about, and I hope works really well, is they announced that they have an anti-reflective coating that supposedly reduces the glare on the iPad by about 50%, which is going to be a big deal, especially for like outdoor usage and stuff like that. So I'm hoping that works really well. Hopefully it's not like the coating on my glasses, which starts to flake off and get really, you know, bad after a couple of years. Hopefully it's somehow impregnated or embedded in the glass and sort of part of the process. But, you know, we'll have to wait to find out about that. I think this was leaked a little bit, but the processor did get an update. We now have an A8X in the iPad Air 2. It's Apple's second generation 64-bit processor. They say it has 3 billion transistors, up to 40% faster CPU. They also bumped up the graphics, 2.5 times faster on the graphics, and they made a big point to show that the GPU performance is 180 times faster than the original iPad. So just, you know, a few years later, Apple's been rolling out new iPads every year. They've had a quantum leap in terms of performance, and that should be great for a lot of the higher end games and things that are coming out. They added a barometer to the array of sensors that are in the iPad Air. So now you can do elevation, steps, and those sorts of things. They made some major updates and improvements to the camera. It's now a 1.2 micron pixel sensor, 2.4 aperture, so still not in line with the sensor that is on the new iPhone 6, but pretty darn good. Can capture 1080p high definition video. They really upped, because of the A8 processor, the image signal processing, so you can do a lot more with the images that are coming off of the camera. It has support for burst photos, the time-lapse support, now slow motion video support at 120 frames per second. So still not the 240 that you can get on the iPhone 6, 6 Plus, but still some pretty good slow-mo. And it has dual microphones for better audio. They also did an update to the front-facing FaceTime camera as well. So they, you know, Phil quoted that it's really great device for taking photos, even though, and he tried to make it sound like, you know, we know it's kind of dorky to take photos with your iPad, but people do it, so you might as well have a really good camera. Yeah, people do it, but it's still not the first device that I reach for taking photos. Still nice to see them doing some camera updates, I guess. Faster Wi-Fi and LTE, so 802.11ac Wi-Fi support, which I know a lot of you were hoping for, and faster LTE, including support for 20 LTE bands. And it looks like the iPad really is, if you get the LTE version, really is one device for all carriers. As a matter of fact, Apple pointed out that they have something they're calling the Apple SIM. I don't even think it has a SIM card slot in it. So it's got a built-in SIM that will let you switch between carrier networks, at least in the States, ones that are supporting the new Apple SIM, and that's AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile. You can month-to-month switch between different carriers. So if you want to try different carriers out, or maybe you go to a different region and you know I'm going to be here for a month, you can actually switch carriers on the fly without having to swap the SIM out. You just do it in the software right inside the device. And in the UK, EE is also supporting the new Apple SIM. But you only have the one model for all of the carriers. Verizon apparently is not participating with the Apple SIM thing. So if you are a Verizon customer, you do need to have the SIM sort of, I guess, coded. It says you have to have the service activated through a store, which that's going to be a little bit inconvenient if you're buying through an Apple retail store. Then you got to pop over to, I guess, the Verizon store if you want to enable your Verizon data. So hopefully Verizon at some point will come on board, and maybe some of the other carriers here in the States as well as abroad. But, you know, this may be pie in the sky. I would hope that at some point this feature makes its way into the iPhone, where there's just one model iPhone, supports all of the bands. You can take it between carriers, take it to any carrier you want, and don't have to do all this hoop jumping. But, you know, that may be a pie-in-the-sky dream, but at least they were able to get it in on the iPad. The iPad Air 2 is also going to have Apple Pay support, they said, for online purchases. So you're not going to be able to use this in-store, but in-app, online purchases, you will be able to do your Apple Pay, and I'm assuming that ties into the Touch ID, which is on there as well. I think that's no surprise that the iPad has Touch ID. There's no NFC sensor in the iPad, so that's why you're not going to be able to use it at retail locations for the Apple Pay system, but at the very least, you can use it online. Something that Apple didn't point out that was actually pointed out by, I think Michael Johnston mentioned this on the iOS show last week, and I didn't realize this, but it looked like from the leaked photos that there was no more rotation lock mute switch on the new iPads, and sure enough, it is not there. So if that is a feature that you like, it's now all in software through the control center. You're not going to be able to mute rotation lock using the button anymore on the new iPad Air. The battery is also considerably smaller, 27.3 milliwatt hours, and I'm assuming that helped them get a little bit more of the thinness as well. But what's amazing is, even though it's quite a bit smaller, it still maintains its 10 hours of battery life. So we'll have to see if that holds up real world, but at least from a marketing perspective, Apple's saying it has the same battery life as the prior generation. And as far as pricing goes, Apple did the little iPhone storage size thing that they did with the iPhone 6 Plus. They did the same thing to the new iPads. You now have a 16 gigabyte model on the low end, and then a jump in the mid-range to 64 gigabytes, and then 128 gigabytes on the high end. $499 US for the 16 gigabyte, $599 for the 64 gigabyte, and $699 for the 128 gigabyte model. And that, of course, is for the Wi-Fi versions. The cellular data versions, just like before, are $130 US more per device in the same configuration. And Apple is keeping around the iPad Air. That's going to be in a 16 gigabyte version for $100 less, so starting at $399 and $449 for a 32 gigabyte configuration. So that's the new iPad Air 2. Now let's talk about the iPad Mini 3, and there's really not a lot to talk about here. It was almost actually comical. It was sort of thrown out almost as an afterthought in Phil Schiller's presentation. He said, oh yeah, by the way, we have updates to the iPad Mini, and it was like one slide. And the reason being is basically the iPad Mini 3 brings Touch ID and a new gold color option. All of the other specifications remain exactly the same. So still using the A7, M7 processors, exactly the same screen, Wi-Fi, LTE, camera. It doesn't get any of the camera improvements or processor improvements that its bigger brother, the iPad Air 2, does. And so in looking at it, pricing-wise, the prices remain the same. So $399 for a 16 gigabyte version, $499 for a 64 gigabyte, and $599 on the 128 gigabyte model of the iPad Mini 3. They are keeping around, again, the iPad Mini 2 in a 16 gigabyte and a 32 gigabyte configuration. And the 16 gigabyte is $100 less than the 16 gigabyte iPad Mini 3. So $299 and $349 for the 32 gigabyte iPad Mini. So if you really don't care about Touch ID, I mean, Touch ID is an amazing thing, but you can get an iPad Mini for $100 less, $150 less in the case of, you know, if you're willing to have a little less storage with a 32 gigabyte model. But I think it's almost a better deal sticking with the iPad Mini 2, iPad Mini 2, rather than going with the iPad Mini. And they are keeping the iPad Mini around as well in the 16 gigabyte convert Wi-Fi, or actually I guess both Wi-Fi and cellular data versions, $249 for 16 gigabyte Wi-Fi iPad Mini, $379 for 16 gigabyte Wi-Fi with cellular iPad Mini. And that was the iPad updates. From there, they moved on to the Mac, and this was arguably the biggest announcement. I guess the iPad Air 2, some pretty big things there, but Apple announced a new iMac with Retina display, and not just an average Retina display. It's a Retina 5K display. 27-inch iMac, 5120 by 2880 resolution. That's 14.7 million pixels. Apple claims it's the world's highest resolution display. Note they didn't say Apple's, you know, that Apple had the highest resolution display, just that this resolution was the highest resolution, because I think Dell is selling a display at the same resolution, although there's a debate with the Dell version. Apparently it seems like it's two panels split in half, because it requires two display ports to run. Apple had to do some special finagling to get theirs driven by a single chip, something called a timing controller, I guess, that handles, kind of acts as the brains of the display, sending out instructions to all the individual pixels. They had to have a whole special one designed to create a custom chip that would drive everything, only needing one T-Con. And I guess that's the one of the differences between what Apple is doing and what Dell is doing with their new 5K display. What's also interesting is the price of the Dell 5K display is the same as the new 27-inch Retina iMac. So Apple's throwing in a whole computer on top of the display for the same price. But basically, 67% more pixels than a 4K display. What was really cool is they showed off the fact that you can have pixel for pixel 4K editing in Final Cut, with room for the timeline and the controls within the interface. So you can still be editing full 4K video, seeing it one for one pixel resolution, and have that extra space to actually be working in. The design pretty much remains exactly the same as the prior generation 27-inch iMac. It's the thin edge with the bubble butt. You got 5 millimeters on the side, and then, you know, rounding out on the back to fit all of the components, things like that. They have a custom timing controller. We already we talked about that a little bit. And they developed a new, they're using a new display technology, Oxide TFT panel, which they say can charge quicker and stay charged longer and delivers a more vivid brightness. What all that stuff means, I'm not a display expert. I'm just relaying what Apple said. I think what it translates to is this is one bad a display. This is a killer display, and they did have some on site. A lot of the hands-on reviews came back, and they said this thing is pristine, gorgeous. And what's great is they're using power-saving LEDs, so it actually uses less energy, 30% less energy. They've been able to improve the on-axis and off-axis contrast ratios. So you're going to get deeper blacks, brighter whites, those sorts of things. And again, that held true with a lot of the people that had a look at this thing. They were saying they were amazing. Now, keep in mind, I'm sure they were perfectly calibrated for the environment. They probably got exactly the right photos to show off this display, but I'm looking forward to getting into an Apple retail store and taking a look at one. On the processor side, it's looking like they're using the Haswell, the latest generation Haswell processors, 3.5 gigahertz quad-core Intel i5. You can upgrade that to up to a 4 gigahertz quad-core Intel i7 processor. Driving those big, gorgeous displays are some AMD Radeon GPUs, AMD Radeon R9s to be specific, an M290X or the AMD Radeon M295X on the build-to-order configuration, and that's 2 gigabytes and 4 gigabytes of video RAM, respectively. Thunderbolt 2 is standard on there. They also come standard with a 1 terabyte Fusion drive, although there are build-to-order options where you can, of course, get solid-state flash drives. And the RAM still does seem to be user-upgradable. So it's actually called out on Apple's tech specs page, and it's become one of the few Macs where you can actually still do your own RAM upgrades. As far as pricing goes, it's starting at $2,499 US. If you're in the UK, it's going to set you back £1,999. I'm not sure how that works out with the exchange rate, but it sounds like it should be right in line with the US pricing. And it is shipping now, so you can go buy one. And I'm hoping to pop into an Apple retail store soon and get my eyes on one. We're kind of due for a new iMac, and I don't know if I'm going to pull the trigger or not, but this one is very, very attractive. And you know, a little on the pricey side for me. Once you start configuring it out with SSDs, you know, I've gotten addicted to SSDs, thanks to all of you who pushed me forward. And it's great. I'm not complaining. I love the SSDs, but you know, it's sort of like that adage: once you go to SSD, you cannot go back to a spindle drive, and that drives the price up a little bit. So I think, you know, a standard configuration on an iMac, something most of us are going to be really happy with, you're looking at $3,000 in that sort of range. If you're more budget conscious, though, the last thing that Apple had to announce, and again, they did this almost as a little aside, but I was still very excited to see it, is the Mac Mini. The Mac Mini got a little bit of love. It got a little bit of a bump. Maybe not as much as some of us had hoped. And, you know, they did kill off part of it. So we no longer have the Mac Mini server and the 2 terabyte storage option that has been discontinued. But respectable upgrade to the Mac Mini. Dual Thunderbolt 2 connections, 4 USB 3.0 ports, an update to 802.11 AC Wi-Fi. Still got the gigabit Ethernet in there. Still got the HDMI port. Still have the SD card slot, audio in and out. What was removed and lost, though, that will disappoint some folks, is they removed FireWire 800 support. So if you have been using your Mac Mini like me as a server running FireWire drives, it may not be the upgrade for you. But newer Intel Haswell processors in there, and the mid to upper range models do have the newer Intel Iris graphics, which will help significantly with graphics performance. And they got the price back down to the original Mac Mini price of under $500 US, $499 US starting. That would be £399 in the UK. They are shipping today. I wish they would have got the $100 price drop across the line. It really is only on the base model. And I do have to say, the base model spec-wise is a little bit disappointing. The $499 model only comes with 4 gigabytes of RAM. I really think in this day and age, you have to have 8, although some of you are debating me on that. We've struck up a healthy debate on Twitter. You know, depending upon your usage, I guess you could maybe get away with 4 gigabytes of RAM, especially if you had an SSD drive in there. But the hard drive standard on the base model is a 500 gigabyte, 5,400 RPM drive. I don't see that as big of a deal, as that big of a deal because of who the sort of target market for the Mini is. I don't think this is being sold as a high performance, you know, graphics video editing machine. Processor is 1.4 gigahertz dual core. Many folks have pointed out that there is no quad core option on the Mac Mini. They're all dual core processors, and Intel HD Graphics 5000 on the base model. So I just looking at the base model specs, I would have a hard time recommending it to anybody but a very specific sort of user, because for just $200 more, starting at $699, you can get double the RAM, double the storage on the hard drive, plus get a bump up to a 2.6 gigahertz dual core Intel i5 processor and the Intel Iris graphics. So I think you're getting a lot more Mac Mini for that $200. And the other thing is, it's unclear at this point whether or not you can do your own memory upgrades. There was one source that claimed to say definitively the new Mac Mini, it does not have user upgradable RAM. You'd always been able to sort of undo that little bottom panel and get right to the RAM. I don't know if it's now soldered on or what they're saying, but it seems to me, and looking like the images, that plate is still there. So I don't know why that change would have been made. Peter Cohen, I know, was looking to try and get confirmation from Apple, but hadn't heard back. So if anybody happens to know, if you've popped into an Apple retail store and they have one of the new Mac Minis, let us know if the RAM is user upgradable. I'd really like to find that one out, and I'll try and follow up on a future episode of the MacCast. But that was sort of all the big announcements, my thoughts and opinions on it, and some of the additional information that's come out. Now I want to talk a little bit to our friend Kelly Gamont from the Mac Observer. She also does the TUAW After Show podcast. They used to do the TUAW, the unofficial Apple weblog talk cast, but now her and Mike are doing the After Show. And she had sort of wrote up an article for the Mac Observer with 5 or 6 predictions, I think, for the event. And it turned out she got 5 of these things right. So I thought she'd be a great person to talk to. Right after the event, I got her on the horn and we talked about all of the announcements and things like that. So here's Kelly Gamont. Hey, Kelly, how you doing?
I'm not bad. Adam, how are you?
Thanks for coming back on the MacCast. It's been way too long.
It has.
Way too long. But this is a good day to bring you on.
It totally is.
Because I'm sure many of my audience already know, but you do some writing for the Mac Observer.
I do.
And you did a little piece earlier. Was it that this week or last week?
I can't remember. It was a week ago, last week on Thursday.
With some predictions.
I did. I threw down, this is what Apple's going to do next week. And I just went with not what I think they should do, not what Apple must do or they're doomed, nothing like that. I said, this is what's going to happen. And there were 6 items on that list. And 5 of those items were accurate. My one miss was that something needed to happen with the MacBook Pro. Not the MacBook Pro Retina and not the MacBook Air. But that middle of the road line, I feel like it's clutter at this point and it's probably time for it to go. So it's still in the store, which was the thing that I figured would happen, is it would sort of get the iPod Classic treatment where they would silently go send it to live on the Daisy Hill Puppy Farm.
Take it out back.
Yeah. So that didn't happen. But of 6 things, I got 5 of them right. And according to other analyst records, that means everyone has to listen to every crazy thing I have to say from now until the end of time.
Wow. I think you got a tweet.
That was really loud. I had no idea that was even on. That snuck up on me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So you want to run down some of that stuff? I mean, we're catching up basically on everything that was announced today. So I know many people have probably heard stuff, but should we just go through the 6 in order and see how you did?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up now, actually.
You don't remember.
No, well, I remember what they were, but I want to go in order because I got them all.
Should we go in Apple's order or your? Maybe we should go in your order. New iPads.
Yes, I did say we would get new iPads and new iPad minis. What I did not realize is that we were going to get the iPad mini at full impulse power. By the way, all the stuff we just told you about the iPad Air 2, it's now in the mini too. And now we're going to move on to the next thing.
We are.
It was very, very little attention given to the Mini.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, just sort of how Apple, how it was presented during the keynote. Yeah, the focus was certainly on the iPad Air 2.
Yes.
And probably because of the design, right? I mean,
it's
thinner. You know, Touch ID's coming. So did the Mini get the same processor upgrade? No, yes.
I haven't the faintest
idea.
It went
by so fast. I don't
think
so.
Didn't really say. Yeah. Yes,
I don't think
sure.
It gets the snazzy new A8X, but I'm talking out of turn because I haven't double checked on that. But I think that was the sort of
thing. I hope it did, but I kind of got the I honestly don't even remember the slide. It went by so fast, but it does come in gold, like the big one. We did see that.
Does that do anything for you? Does the gold thing? I never went in for the gold thing. Are you a gold device person?
I'm not even a black device person. I'm a white device person. And because Apple trained me well with the iPod, basically. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't think twice about it. I think the gold looks nice that mm-hmm. they do the champagne or whatever they call it. It's just not for me. But the people who like it really like it. I have no issue with it. If you want a gold device, by all means, go right ahead. Asia is a place where it is particularly popular. And I know a lot of people, having seen it in person, have said the same sort of thing. Like, it's not the sort of tacky device I expected it to be in gold. And that's kind of the camp I'm in. Like, I kind of thought it was going to be, like, ostentatious, and it turns out it's really not that bad. It's just not for me.
What do you think about the other thing interesting here, what do you think about the number naming thing? So they are doing the whole numbering thing.
Yeah, they brought that back. I thought that was really interesting.
iPad Mini 3, iPad Air 2.
Mm-hmm. And then I wonder if we're going to just go back, because we did the same thing with plain old iPad. We had iPad, iPad 2, and then just the new iPad until the Air. We had like three models that were called the new iPad.
Yeah.
Or two. We had the 3 and the 4 that were both just the new iPad. And then we got iPad Air. So, yeah, I think it's interesting, particularly because of something we will talk about later, which doesn't get its own model designation like that.
Yeah, so the Mini is really all about the Touch ID, and because mm-hmm. I just looked, it's same A7, M7, looks like same EyeSight camera, you know, those sorts of things. So okay. I think that's why it didn't get as nearly as much attention as the
because it's not
as
the full-on
iPad
upgrade.
2, yeah, with the better camera and better processor, better image processing, thinner. You know,
yeah, and they showed some amazing stuff.
But
on
you
iPad.
Know, so that one okay. I think most of us knew that was going to happen. Probably number two on your list. I think a lot of us knew was going to happen too. Although there were some good announcements with this one, which is Apple Pay.
Yeah, and this is why I put these at the top of my list, is because these were the things that were sort of presumed were going to happen, and in real life were really pretty likely. So that's why they're at the top of my list, even though they weren't the way Apple opened the event. It was just sort of going in likelihoods.
What was surprising to me on Apple Pay was how many more banks and partners and things like that they signed up in the last month.
500 banks since they came out and said, we're going to do this thing called Apple Pay. Yeah, and it's the real deal.
Yeah. I wish more retailers were on board. Seems like the banks are adopting it a lot faster than and I don't know if this is the whole, you know, a lot of people have speculated it's because of the whole federal mandate to switch over to chip and pin, or we're just getting pins. I don't know. Yeah, exactly. I haven't
whatever the upgrade is.
Dug
a lot of retailers
that far enough. Yeah,
yeah, and a lot of retailers have to buy new hardware for credit card machines in order to do that. What I have noticed is I now have a card with the chip in it, mm-hmm. and I want to use it. I want to use it any place that will let me because it's safer,
right,
than the swipe. And a lot of places have a terminal with a spot where you could put your card, and they have blocked it off because they're not using it yet. So lots of places have the hardware and just haven't done whatever it is that needs to be done in order to deploy it.
Right.
So I'm still having a swipe. But we got an announcement that it's happening on Monday.
Monday.
And
I wonder if anybody will actually have a machine on Monday. Like, am I going to be actually be able to walk into a Starbucks or a Walgreens or a McDonald's and buy something with my phone?
Walgreens, I heard it was rolling out on Saturday or something. So there's a good chance that it will be ready to go on Monday. on 0 days.
We'll have to give it a shot.
Yeah.
And report back. Hopefully it works as awesome and as easily as they claim it to, because if it's at all cumbersome and things like that, those are the kinds of things that turn retailers off. You know, if you're holding up the line.
And users.
You know, because it's not scanning your fingerprint or it's not doing the NFC.
Yeah, think about the instant riot that happens behind the person who pulls out their checkbook at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Think about that just for a moment.
So if it's, so not, if it's not faster than swipe and sign, Apple's going to have uphill battle.
I do want to warn folks who are listening, if it turns out that you're out and about on Monday and you see roving bands of pasty geeks waving giant iPhones around, it's cool. It's not like it's zombie invasion or anything. They're just trying to find a place that'll accept Apple Pay. Don't worry.
Yeah, and then we get Yosemite.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing. Yeah.
We get Yosemite.
We knew that was happening today.
Now.
Yeah, well, that was surprising.
I didn't figure it'd be today. I just figured we'd hear when I would like it. I even said I'd like it to be today, you know, the day of the event. I just didn't expect it would be the day of the event. But Apple apparently got their groove back, because after three release candidates, they've released something into the world. And so far, I haven't seen any catastrophe.
Nothing's blown up. But it's really, really early at this point.
Yeah. And like, downloads may just be finishing at this point for most people, because it's a huge download.
I'll always caution everybody to, you know, your production machine, think twice.
Yeah.
Do a little bit of your homework. You don't need to have this thing day one.
No. You know why? Even more importantly than where angels fear to tread and all of that, even more importantly is logistically. If you weren't already running the Yosemite beta, there is probably nothing that is going to be such a high hurdle that you can't wait until next week or even next weekend. When the stampede has subsided.
Yeah. Yeah, let everybody else be a guinea pig.
Yeah, it could take you way, way less time. Like, people talked about the hours it took to download iOS 8 when they were doing over-the-air updates. And because I waited, it took me no time at all.
Yeah. So we already mentioned MacBook Pro. That didn't happen.
That was my miss.
Yeah, well, you know, they happened not too long ago, so.
Yeah, and I, like, the Retina, I expect to stick around, and the Air, I expect to stick around. But I think those two are the future, and I think that the MacBook Pro is sort of this neglected middle child now, and I wish they'd stop neglecting it and just let it go.
Maybe put it out to pasture.
Yeah,
like you said.
Yeah, I think I really think it's time. I have a MacBook Pro because at the time I couldn't afford to pay the Retina tax because it was over $500. So I just went, you know, I could take $200 and get a way better processor in a plain old MacBook Pro. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I don't use the optical drive. I didn't buy it because, oh, good heavens, I need an optical drive in my computer. That just wasn't the case. I didn't need one in my previous machine even, really. So I did the data doubler thing and dropped my old hard drive in that space. And, you know, I didn't miss it. And I still have that drive. So I wasn't, like, buying it for that reason. I was literally buying it because the budget that I had dictated that I didn't get a Retina display when they were new. So that's it. So now we get two sweet, sweet updates.
Yes. Yeah, one that could have very well gone out to pasture and didn't, the Mac Mini. I was worried they were going to go one way or the other. I really wanted them to do an update because I love my Mac Mini.
Yeah.
And I think it just shows that there's probably a lot of people out there that love the Mac Mini as to why they didn't just sort of let it drop off.
I think it still hits the sweet spot that it did when Steve announced it, and that is the switcher. People who already have a keyboard and a mouse and a monitor and really want something a little different under their desk. You know, don't necessarily want a giant tower they keep kicking. Or even, you know, because it's such a small, compact, and unbelievably useful machine, lots of businesses buy one, and that's what their business runs on.
Yeah. Yeah, and they did an important thing too, which was get the price point back down to $499.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had it at $499 at one point. Maybe they never did, but
I think it started there and then it inched up, and then it stayed there.
Yeah, I think it's so it's the sub $500 Mac. Although frankly, and we talked about this a little bit, I was on the 5x5, a 5x5 special show with Dan Benjamin. And if you look at the specs, 4 gigs of RAM, you know, and OS 10 Yosemite, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Probably not even my enemies.
But, well, true. But given what a lot of people are doing with it, you know, maybe it's a little web surfing, maybe it's a little bit of mail server, like those things that you can do, you know, a point of sale system if you're running a register with it, which I know a number of places here in Portland that do.
Yeah.
Those things aren't full on horsepower. So I don't know that the 4 gig is going to necessarily be a problem. I'm sure you can buy more. I'm sure I'm
yeah, you can
completely
pay,
capable
you can,
of dropping more
this
in.
This is the thing. For $100 more, you can build the order. You can get 8, which is where I think it should be. I think it should be at 8 at $499. I think this is a classic thing where Apple cheaps out to get the price point to a certain place. They cheap out in the wrong spot,
certainly,
in my opinion. You know,
it could do with a smaller hard drive instead, probably.
maybe not there too. They're also putting in a 5400 RPM, I think 500 gigabyte drive, which is probably about as small and slow as they could go.
Somehow I thought it was still 750, and I'm like, you could do 500 in one of those. So if they're doing 500, then it's,
I mean, really, it's in bulk, what's RAM. What is 8 gigs of RAM cost Apple?
Yeah.
You know, 50 cents at this point.
Yeah,
that's it's more than 50 cents probably, but you know, you get the point.
But it's still an update. It's still the love. And because it now starts at $499, I think there's a mental thing there. Because I'll tell you what, there have been a few points where Mr. Kelly has tippy-toed up to the edge of maybe it's time for me to buy a Mac and has looked over into the chasm of Macness.
Yeah.
And which is totally a thing, by the way.
Well,
and backed off because he went, $600 is a lot of money for a computer because he comes from Windows land.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll point out is that, and this won't work with the Mini, but you know, when I did my SSD upgrade, I also had my MacBook Pro into Apple, and they said they claimed my RAM was bad because I was having some issues, and so they dropped me back down to the built-in config, the 4 gigs that came with my machine.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran that for probably 6 months. I had the 8 gig upgrade. I had ordered it before I even got my machine back. And I never installed it because the SSD with 4 gigs is fine. But the thing is the Mini at 4 gigs still has a 5400 RPM spindle drive. So you're not going to get the advantage of, you know, the fast memory swapping when you drop into virtual memory. So,
but I think that price point is still a mental thing.
Oh, absolutely.
I know at $499. At $499, that'll get Mr. Kelly in the door. He'll go look at them, and he'll consider them, and then maybe he'll go...
But talk him out of the 4 gigs, please.
Well, I'm going to, but...
Because the user experience, that's the problem. Someone's going to walk into an Apple store, and they're going to go, oh, this is great, I can get into a Mac at $499, and then if they have a bad out-of-the-box experience, you know, that can sour them for... A lot longer, too. So Apple's got to tread carefully there, I think.
But I think the price point will get people in the door. Hey, $500. And then they get there and go... Because, again, as a Windows user, they're going to go 4 gig. What do you do with 4 gig of memory
in 2014? Hopefully they're that savvy. I worry about the people that aren't that savvy. But
I'm hoping, now that it's there, I'm just really excited about the possibility that maybe it'll get there, and now Mr. Kelly will go see them, and he'll decide they're really nice, and then he'll go, well, it's only another $100, and then he'll just pay it, and then he'll have a Mac, and even if he installs Windows on it and that's what it runs, it's still going to be a lot nicer than the machine that's in the office with me now, and I'm really looking forward to that day.
Yeah, and I want to get to the big announcement, because there's also one thing that's not on your list, and I know you said you were being hardcore about, you know, what this list was at the top of the show, but there's one other thing I want to talk to you about before I let you go. So let's talk quickly as we can about the iMac, which is that this is the biggie.
It is. This was the reason of the event. It is the new 5K display. They're calling it a 5K Retina display, and your giant HD TV that you've got in your house on the wall takes up a postage stamp. I think John Martellaro said something, 18% or something of the screen.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it looks like a beautiful screen. And it is such a beautiful screen and such a tremendously powerful screen that they had to invent technology in order to turn this into a screen that was viable for users. Yeah. It's amazing. And
yeah. I'm glad you're talking about the, what they call that, the T-Con.
Yeah, the timing controller. The timing
controller. I have no idea what that means. I got to dig into that. But it's like they had to make a custom one. I guess a timing controller is something that displays or these displays need to have. I don't know if it's exclusive to 4K or something we have in all of our displays. I have no idea at this point.
I think there's varying degrees of them in displays because I've
heard of it.
But, yeah.
And I never knew it mattered before, but today Apple told us it mattered so much that we had to make our own custom one.
Well, when you are powering displays that can be measured in acres. You have to come up with new technology for that. So exactly what I said was going to happen is what happened. And that is the iMac got an update on the outside. So it is not dramatically different on the back, but on the front, you get this giant, beautiful display. And it is, I'm not going to remember the technical term, but it's something like 110 billion lines of resolution. It's, give or take.
Oh, I don't know how many lines. I think they said 14.7 million pixels.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm thinking of. It's got all the pixels. Here's the thing that's funny to me is that there was no Thunderbolt display. So in order to buy the best monitor that Apple makes, you have to buy the one that has a computer slapped on the back.
Don't you kind of think that's deliberate? I mean, this is something I wanted to talk about because you would have thought they would have also done a 4K or a 5K Retina Thunderbolt display update for all those Mac Pro people out there, right? Who want a shiny Apple display to go with their Mac. And it's sort of like Apple telling those guys, it seems like they're further sort of further.
It feels like marginalizing.
Marginalizing. That's the word I was looking for. The pro users. Again, mm-hmm. And not only that, more so it seems like they're saying, you know, we've got the Mac Pro for those of you who are hardcore and you think you need this machine.
Yeah.
But the iMac is the pro machine that we think you should be using. And they even did that with what they showed it doing. Because mm-hmm. they made a big point to show, the video was all about a pro photographer using this thing to do his really, high-end image processing and stuff like that. And then they also talked about how the fact with Final Cut, you can have a full 4K image, so you can be editing in 4K and still have all your palettes and your control panels and your timeline up there because you've got all that extra room. You've got the extra 1K of space for all that stuff. So you can be sitting there looking at a full 4K image and still have room to actually work. You don't have to be in full screen.
Yeah. And it really felt like that. I was sort of, I haven't looked at the store yet, but I would imagine by now if people were seeing a Thunderbolt display that had been updated, I would have noticed by now because I would have heard somebody in Portland screaming their head off about it.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
And so, there's other displays out there. So we were mentioning, I think Dell announced they haven't talked about pricing or anything like that, but they're going to have their own 5K display, which I think is even higher resolution than Apple's 5K display. It's got more pixels.
Yeah.
No pricing and availability yet, but it's sort of like, even when the Mac Pro came out, Apple didn't have a 4K display, but they made a big deal about how it does 4K and then said, oh, by the way, you got to get monitors from someone else. So it just feels like either Apple's going to get out of the monitor business. Maybe they've just decided that's like other peripherals. It's like printers or those sorts of things. We're not going to do those anymore. We're going to stick to the CPUs and the thing. And if you need to hook a display up to our thing that requires a display, then, look elsewhere. Because we're not
power to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Unfortunately, because I know a lot of people really, to them, the design is a big deal. And as much as, bless the heart of those other vendors, they try. No one's matched the gorgeousness of a Thunderbolt display.
And it's not because of the screen itself. Like, I can get an IPS display, which is what the innards are of that gorgeous screen. I can get an IPS display in a lot of places, and I can get it from a lot of different people. And when it's powered off, there is nothing that looks more beautiful on a desk, regardless of the desk, than the Apple display. It's just the way of things. And it's kind of a bummer because if somebody else could... If any other company would realize that part of what people like about Apple hardware is that it also looks really nice when it's off. As soon as some company stops and thinks about that for a minute and decides to make something that is not a slab of piano black plastic that I have to put on my desk, that guy is going to totally make all the money, because everybody who wants a reasonably priced display to hook up to something is going to go to those guys.
Yeah. And to be fair, the Dell one looks like it has kind of this, the aluminum. I don't know. I just saw it briefly. So again, they're trying, but it still doesn't have the Apple cachet. In terms of the design. So last thing I want to just bring up is something that Apple did announce, but I think both you and I and probably a lot of other people in the world are really hoping Apple will do. And we've been talking about it for, it seems like, 2 years now.
Two and a half. Well, yeah, we're probably waiting.
Something more with the Apple TV. And not just about content, because we know, like, you know, the content thing, that's a challenge for Apple. And that's probably what's holding up any kind of update. But you want to throw out, you know, you wrote another piece on Mac Observer, and I know you've been playing around in this space. You want to tell people what you're hoping becomes of the next gen Apple TV?
Here's what I want from the next Apple TV. I want the next Apple TV, whatever generation, you know, the fourth gen, whatever physical attributes it has, whatever size it is, whatever color it is, whatever it comes with. We already know that it's got a bit of the HomeKit stuff in it, and that could be that. The speculation, of course, is that it's so that it will become Apple, so that Apple will get into the home automation business, and it will turn the Apple TV into a hub. Now, it's also possible
the
that
brain
it's just,
for our house, right? This is going to be this is going to be the Star Trek computer in the middle of my home.
This is the thing that I want above all things. And the reason for that was driven home by today's event. At the end, when Tim talked about, and I think Craig Federighi also talked about the customer experience and having a good user experience with a device, whatever that device may be. Right now, this minute as we speak, there is very little that can be described as good about the user experience with home automation. I've been at this for a couple of years now, and good Lord, let me tell you, a lot of it is still really rough around the edges, and most of it is still stuff that I can't recommend to muggles, because unless you are somebody who enjoys doing this, you are going to have a, you are going to probably have an impossible time. I do enjoy doing this, and I have considered testing the aerodynamic properties of virtually every hub that I have put into my house.
And there's some decent ones out there, right? But I mean,
just only now, and only, and they're new, and so a lot of stuff doesn't necessarily work with them yet, and it's really a frustrating experience. The documentation sometimes isn't good. Sometimes people expect that you're going to be able to develop the code so that you can make it talk to that light switch or to that other device. Or you end up like me and you kind of give up on the hub being able to do all of the work for you. And now you just have a folder of apps on your phone, and one of them controls the lights, and one of them controls the Wemo, and one of them controls the thermostat, and one of them controls the sprinkler, because you can't get anything that will do everything well enough to get you to give up that folder of apps. And that's where I'm at right now, is I have a folder on the front page of my phone so that I can do all the stuff that I need to do. And it is the most frustrating thing, because every time I have to open that folder, I'm a little bit irritated, because it should be easier to do. And the nice thing about HomeKit, the beauty of HomeKit, is that HomeKit's not an app. HomeKit is just a method to let you, to let a developer access things system-wide. And by system-wide, what I really mean is Siri. So if I go upstairs and I forget if the lights are off downstairs or not, because I can't see them the way my house is laid out, I can tell Siri, turn off all the lights, or even turn off all the lights downstairs.
And or you can just ask her if they're on.
Yeah. And if I'm using a Philips Hue bulb, which they've announced that they are going to be working with HomeKit, Siri will do it. I have a couple in my basement, and Siri will say, I've turned them off, or they were off already, or, you know, whatever. And you can also, in theory, because this is what they showed us at WWDC, you can set up scenes, which is just a chain of actions. Basically, it's like having a script. So I can say, Siri, it's time for bed. And then Siri will drop the thermostat a few degrees, make sure all the lights are off, turn off whatever other things I say need to turn off, make sure the porch light is on, you know, that kind of thing. Huh. And do it all. And all I have to do is hold down the button on the front of my phone and say, Siri, it's time for bed. And that's it. This is the thing that Apple totally could do, has the capability to do. And even better, lots of people who have been trained to upgrade every 2 years or even yearly when Apple puts out something new have waited a really long time, because the last time they updated the Apple TV was March of 2012. So it's now been 2.5 years since we've had any sort of love for the Apple TV. And we've heard the motions from Chairman Honeycrisp about this, because he did
for
say...
For those who didn't watch the keynote, that's Tim Cook's covert code name under heightened triple security at Apple now. Right.
Yeah, in order to keep the secret stuff from happening, from leaking out. So... one thing that he had said was, now that, you know, we've made so much money selling, you know, on the Apple TV, basically, we need to stop calling it a hobby. So I really hope that they're trying to do something now and take it seriously and make it something that everybody really wants to have. Cause a lot of people do now, cause they're like, hey, it's $99 and I can play all my iTunes movies on my big screen TV and I don't have to get my computer out and I don't have to AirPlay it and, you know, go through a bunch of gyration. If I just buy an Apple TV, I'm done. And it doesn't cost that much more than a Roku or a whatever the other box is that I can't think of the name of anymore.
It's time for it to grow up beyond just the being a content box. It can do so much more. It has so much more potential. And I like this idea,
yes.
You know, it being tied into HomeKit and maybe even HealthKit to some degree. And of course, the whole gaming thing. I mean, it certainly could play some really great games. So, you know, you throw a couple of Bluetooth controllers on there and you've got a really nice system for doing a lot of stuff, and creates a lot of opportunity for developers as well, which is always a good thing for Apple's ecosystem.
Exactly.
So I really like this idea. And it was sad we didn't see anything like that, but, you know, just like you, I was pretty sure we weren't going to see anything like
right.
that.
Well, I wished for it, but I didn't expect it. And the reason I didn't expect it is because when they do events at Town Hall is not a very big space. So they didn't have a lot of room to invite a lot of people. And if they're going to do something like this where the computers are updated, they need to make sure that all the tech press people are there. And that's going to be most of the room that they've got in there already. So they weren't going to be able to invite Disney and CBS and HBO and whoever it is that runs Crackle and, you know, all those kind of things, and get, you know, the CEO of Netflix up on stage to talk about how awesome the new device is and look at all this new content that we've just secured in order to show off what the new Apple TV can do. Like, we don't have any of that. You know, we don't have room for any of those people to get up on stage when it only seats like 300 folks. So I think when they do the Apple TV, it's going to go big. And the reason it's going to go big is because it's going to be not only home automation, but TV and movie people who are going to want to show off what they can do on the new device. And that's going to take more space than Town Hall has, which is why I didn't think it was going to happen. I really, really, really wanted it to, but no.
Well, hopefully we get an event in early 2015 or something.
Yes. We're all giving you the Apple Watch. And by the way...
Oh, that's right. We got the watch. Maybe later. Who knows? They might have time on the Apple TV. Unfortunately, I'd like, you know, you and I both would like to see something happen sooner than later.
No. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that covers it. I think we got it all, and nice work on your predictions. I think we've mentioned a few times you are doing writing for the Mac Observer, so people can follow you there at Verso on Twitter. What else are you up to? Where else can people kind of catch up with what Kelly is up to these days?
Well, you used to be able to hear me on the Tua Talkcast. The Tua Talkcast has come to an end. And so Mike Rose of TUAW and I have started a new podcast called The After Show, which is what we used to call the bit after we stopped recording the Tua Talkcast. So you can find us at After Show Podcast. The show is listed in iTunes, and we're going to hopefully we put out an episode earlier this week, and hopefully we'll have something in the next few days so that we can get to talk about all the Apple stuff that's been happening.
Awesome. So check you out there, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So there you go, Kelly Gamont and some of her reactions and thoughts on what happened at Apple's event this week. Obviously, lots of things, very exciting things going on. We've got a lot of things to process and sort of check out with the updates to iOS 8 and OS 10 Yosemite, and I'm looking very forward to diving into that stuff in the weeks to come, and also find out your opinions on all of this stuff. So if you have any feedback for me, be sure to pass it along. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors. Gazelle, hey, if you're going to pick up one of those new items, you want to head to Gazelle. It's the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets, get some cash that you can use to maybe buy that shiny new iPad. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander Touch, which now has the new Text Expander keyboard, so you can get all of your snippets right there in iOS, along with PDF Pen for your iOS devices and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can find out more information and details on all of their software over at smilesoftware.com. And lynda.com, they keep you up to date with your software. You can pick up brand new skills and explore new hobbies with their easy-to-follow video tutorials. Like I said, they have that new one all on all the shiny new features of OS X Yosemite. You can try it out free for 7 days just by going to lynda.com/MacCast. That's lynda.com/MacCast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. I'd like to also thank CashFly for providing the bandwidth for the MacCast. You can find them at cashfly.com. That's CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media, and they're at backbeatmedia.com. If you have any feedback for me, a comment, a question, some reaction to some of these new announcements. If you picked up a shiny new iPad and you get it in your hands next week, I'd love to know what you think about it. You can send an audio comment or an email to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9, and you can leave voicemail there. Also, Skype has a voicemail. My Skype address is the MacCast, and you can leave messages there. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. We're also on Google Plus, MacCast Google Plus community. Just search for MacCast on Google, and you should be able to find that as well. And I look forward to seeing you all online. But until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.